Hello there, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Wednesday, April 21st, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Who is this person?
Well, ma'am, I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. All I can say is thank God Wednesday has finally rolled around again because the talented Mr. Hibbert is back with us this week. That's Clayton Hibbert, the artistic director for the upcoming Seattle Erotic Art Festival, don't you know? This is part two of our conversation, and this week we explore the intersection of art, culture, and the erotic.
Don't you know the meaning of propriety?
I sure do, but we don't practice that much around here. If you somehow missed part one of this fascinating chat, which premiered at this time last week, you'll find it in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you have to do is use the site's search function in the sidebar, type in podcast number 199, and voila! It's as simple as that. But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do the search. Clayton invites us all to visit the Seattle Erotic Art Festival website at seattleerotic.org.
Now just go away and leave me alone.
Alrighty then. Today's podcast is brought to you by Dr. Dick's Doc Room. You'll find a link to this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish wear and gear right there in the header of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab. You'll sure enough enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yes, sirree, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts and unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salespeople scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your computer, that's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit My Stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did.
Hey, what's going on back there?
It's just me and Clayton, and we're settling in for the show. So, okay, let's get started.
Clayton, welcome back, and thank you again for dropping by drdicksexadvice.com. So in the interim week, we've all had such a wonderful time visiting the website, and I've been hearing from people how excited they are about the upcoming show. So I'm glad that you're back to speaking with us.
Thanks for having me back, Dr. Dick.
So I'd like to pick up where we left off last week, and we were talking mostly about the performance art and the visual art, but the literary component of this is of particular interest to me and our audience because of the Erotic Mind podcast series that I've been doing for close to 2 years now. And the Seattle Erotic Arts Festival website says about this feature, created to highlight the written word as its own distinct art form, our literary showcase, the first of its kind at any erotic art festival, features the work of poets, playwrights, and authors from across the country. These jury-selected works will be presented in intimate readings like story time for grown-ups. A nice reminder that sometimes the most intimate thing you can do is simply listen. I love that. And this is the second year for this feature, right?
That's correct. Second year.
And whose idea was it to include the written word? It was a brilliant idea, I might add.
Yeah, it's a great idea. So it's definitely something that had been overlooked earlier festivals. And Shanna Dion, who is the literary art director for the festival, she brought that up last year and has served quite ably to make that a very important and well-respected part of what we're doing.
Well, the interesting thing is that I mean, there is this efflorescence of erotica. It seems to be popping up everywhere, you know, online, download to own, fabulous books. So, I mean, it's this wonderful new efflorescence of expression, erotic expression. So I'm really glad that y'all taking time to recognize.
Yeah. Oh, we take it quite seriously. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad.
So this year you add something new, and it's called Naked Girls Reading.
Indeed.
Again, the CF site reads, the festival will feature the popular Naked Girls Reading on Friday and Saturday nights. Naked Girl Reading is a group of beautiful ladies who love to read naked. There is something beautiful, something altogether more intimate about a woman reading pretty much anything in, well, nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, you cannot add to that. Except, when are we going to finally have gender parity in this town? We demand naked boys reading, damn it!
Yeah, I hear that. The Naked Girls Reading, in case that's new to your listeners, is something that was founded by Michelle Lamour, a burlesque performer, and it's something that's spread around the country in a very compelling way, and takes place once a month at the Century Ballroom. And
they've
been doing this for a few months here in Seattle, and it's been going on elsewhere for longer than that.
Yes, right.
And
it was founded in Chicago or something
correct,
like that,
right? By Michelle Moore, right? And Indigo Blue and her Academy of Burlesque has brought it out here to Seattle, and we've invited them to participate in the festival. And then I have specifically begged for naked boys to be part of it, but
beg away.
It's unclear if that's going to happen because they have a thing that they do,
that's
and that's
right.
Naked girls,
right.
And it's not clear yet whether they want to adjust that and include men
or not.
So I want to be respectful
to what they're
doing, but
absolutely.
If we can include boys, then we certainly will.
Right. Maybe we need dueling readings.
Yes. That would be, I would be all for that, actually.
Oh, me too. So I'd like to spend some time picking your brain on the whole topic of erotic art, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I mean, who better to ask about this than you? And it's pretty clear to me that defining erotic art is difficult, since perceptions about what is erotic and what is art fluctuate with time and culture.
Definitely.
For example, the depiction of a phallus in some cultures is not erotic, but rather a common symbol of potency and fertility.
Uh-huh.
That's your perception as well, yes?
Oh yeah, it's impossible to accurately label it, to define it in any single phrase or expression, which is why our jury is different every year.
Yeah,
the people who select our art is different every year. The performances are different every year. We know we're not going to satisfy everyone's expression of what that means. So every year we reboot that in a way that allows different people to identify and select what we show.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, what is erotic, I mean, how does one go about deciding that? I mean, is this, somebody says this is erotic, or, I think this is erotic because, and so I think you should think it's erotic as well?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I mean, all of us in the crew putting this together, we're all reluctant to take on that arbiter of expression and what that means. So it's a difficult call.
Yeah.
And so some people will walk through that room and not think that there's anything at all sexy about any of it.
Right.
And other people will find the bulk of it disgusting or uninteresting. And other people will find it too tame for their liking or be completely aroused by the whole thing.
Right.
So there's just as many ways of interpreting that as there are human beings in that room.
Right.
So it's something we take seriously, and that we're very conscious of the fact that we can't satisfy everyone every year.
Yeah. And the erotic is just the one component. The other component is art. I mean, it's got to be art. I mean, it can't
absolutely
be just, something,
right,
I mean,
right,
a dick hanging out of a pants. Although I think that's art.
Yeah, it could be, yeah. I mean, we're not interested in giving every single person a voice on the wall,
right?
What we're interested in finding are those people who've turned their interest in the erotic into art.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have an interest in rope, but you may not be an artist. Or those who have found a way to express their interests artistically are those that wind up showing.
Yeah. And you could be the most fantastic artist who is doing landscapes and doggies and duckies,
right.
But if it doesn't have an erotic component to it, you also wouldn't be part of the show.
Right, yeah. Our focus is, of course, on the erotic, and
right.
So finding artists, especially interesting for us to see artists who are not known for doing erotic work,
right.
To see how they express the erotic,
right.
and hang that up on the shelf is really interesting for us.
Have you found that this is a very liberating thing for perhaps an artist who hasn't been known for his or her erotic work, and finally she or he is able to, you know, come out, so to speak,
absolutely.
An erotic artist?
Yeah, absolutely. And finding a place where your work can be hung up and respected,
yes.
And it's not just, you know, wallpaper on somebody's party,
right.
Is, you know, we really are building a gallery,
right.
And we really do have a mission to increase acceptance,
yeah.
And understanding that this work is art,
yes.
That it's not...
Yes.
That it's not simply for titillation,
yeah.
or whatever other ways people might want to dismiss it.
Right.
It's actually art.
Yeah, and you know, part of this the Erotic Mind podcast series, I've chatted with, you know, visual artists as well as authors about their work. And one of the questions that I always ask them is, have you ever been denigrated for the work that you've done?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where people would say, you know, you're a really terrific, you know, technical artist, but you know, what is it with, you know, your, you know, purient fascination with blah blah genitals,
mm-hmm.
or breasts or whatever,
right.
And you know, can't you tone that down and you know buckle down and be a damn good artist,
yeah, a real artist,
yes,
right.
A real artist,
yeah,
or writing smutty stories. I mean, you know, you've got such a knack with words. Why don't you, you know, illuminate the world, you know, in a different sort of fashion?
Yeah, the thing is, everybody has sex, or most people do, or they,
mm-hmm.
or they are alive as a result of sex,
right.
And so it's part of everyone's experience,
yeah.
and there are so many aspects of that are just part of who we are,
right.
And so having an opportunity to express those things artistically,
mm-hmm.
is important for,
mm-hmm.
us as a society, to not to ignore those things or to dismiss them is to do a huge part of ourselves and our culture a disservice.
Right. So let me ask you, the premise of the question I began with is that there is there's a fluctuation between what is art and what is culture, what is art and what is erotic with time. Since you've been part of the festival for as many years as you have you seen flowering or a development of, you know, the sense of erotic? Are things now more edgier than they were once before? Are things included now that were not included before?
Absolutely. For one thing, the draw that the festival has certainly expanded, and so,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot more. The audience that we have is a lot more diverse,
right.
And the kinds of expression that we feature, we didn't used to feature performance, for instance, at all, and,
mm-hmm.
so that to me is certainly a big door that,
right.
we opened. The art is different every year because, like I said, the jury that selects it,
yeah.
changes,
right.
But in the beginning we certainly had a lot more photography because,
yeah.
there were more people shooting erotic pictures, maybe,
right.
than there were people doing 3D erotic art, or at least we didn't reach that,
right.
that segment of the audience.
Right.
The overall tone of things, I'm not sure I could identify a real shift in sort of what we're showing,
but
the acceptance of the medium of art for erotica is certainly grown,
mm-hmm.
and so the kind of art that we attract now is more diverse.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that I could identify a trend,
right.
but the total volume and number of voices that we hear from has grown.
And since the the festival is on its eighth year. We talked about that last week. I suspect, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, that's staying power, and that means that this probably would attract, you know, bigger name artists than it probably would have in its first couple years.
Certainly, mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. The legitimacy of the event
right.
has certainly changed
right.
from
yeah.
from something that draws a few hundred people in a warehouse
mm-hmm.
to several thousand at Seattle Center, and that,
right.
that certainly gives it some credibility.
Right. So there are discernible criteria that you and your team use to choose the art that you will feature in the show. And if that's so, would you care to share some of the things that you consider or the juries consider in choosing either performance art or visual art?
The juries and the directors of those things we try not to restrict them too much. So there are things that you'll see on the walls that you may wonder, how is that erotic?
Right.
Or you may see on the stage and wonder, that just looks like dance to me. How is that erotic? And the what we've asked the jury and the directors to do is to identify the best art
mm-hmm.
that's submitted. So the best art, it doesn't have to be, we don't say you need, you know, 50% women and 50% men. We don't put those kinds of strictures on
mm-hmm.
it. It just
right.
needs to be good
yeah.
and it needs to be erotic. And
yeah.
the unifying thread is that it's erotic to someone
yeah.
and that it has artistic merit.
Right. And so it can be, you know, something thoughtful or suggestive as opposed to just overt.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah, subtlety is certainly appreciated.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. I like it. So, and the jury process is like a very closed thing. I mean, people are not impacting on it and saying, you know, you've got to choose Bob Jones's work because, you know, blah, blah.
Right. No, the jury actually reviews the work anonymously.
Oh,
so
good. Interesting.
The artists' names are stripped off the art
before they're
shown to the jury, so they're selected without any knowledge of who the artists are.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's less true for performers, obviously, because they can't really hide themselves.
Those little black
Groucho Marx glasses on. But it's certainly true of the visual
right.
art, because we
right.
want that. We want
right.
to have as little
right.
nepotism in that
right.
as we could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, how many people on a jury, would you say?
There's three people each year on the jury.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, does it have to be a unanimous decision, or?
No, it's voted.
I see.
It's voted on.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, two out of three of the jury would select one.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Correct.
Is there a limit to how many pieces they can choose?
No, we don't put a limit on that. If they for some reason felt that every single piece that came
yeah.
in had some merit,
yeah.
we would try to find a way to
yeah.
hang it up. But we're limited
right.
primarily by space constraints.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, a distinction is made between erotic art and pornography.
Yes.
And
definitely.
And we touched upon this, you know, in just the comments that you've said just previous to this. But both of these things, erotic art and pornography, depict the body, sensuality, sexuality, even lovemaking. However, most people tend to differentiate between the two forms of expression.
Hmm.
Do you make such a distinction?
I do. I mean, I appreciate both
uh-huh.
forms of expression
right.
there.
Good.
For me to differentiate those two, I mean, it's that's another one of those things that's different for everybody.
Right,
but,
exactly.
But for me, the purpose of pornography is simpler. It's arousal.
Yes.
Pornography is about arousal. And there may have artistic merit,
right.
but that's its purpose.
Right.
And erotic art may also arouse, but its intention is something perhaps more thoughtful.
Right.
And that's a very subjective thing.
Right.
And it's something I need to assess on a individual basis,
right,
and may
right.
change from day to day for
right.
me, even on the same piece,
right,
or the same performance,
right.
Yeah,
that's so true.
Yeah, it's different.
That's so true, and I, you know, I've often said this in, you know, other speaking engagements and in podcasts and stuff, like, you know, if I'm feeling randy, if I'm, you know, sexually aroused, my openness to, you know, sexual things or erotic things could be much broader.
Oh, yeah,
if I have a head cold, if I'm, you know,
right.
sick, if I'm tired, if I've overworked, whatever, that window, that door, perhaps closes some.
Definitely.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that I'm not so interested in. I might actually be turned off by something that
right.
would turn me on in
That's
another
true.
Situation.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you just talked about the distinction that you have. Does the festival also make that distinction? I know you can't really speak for an entity, but
right. Well, the festival tries not to apply that kind of label.
Mm-hmm.
So if we collectively, there have been instances where we've had to sort of decide together whether something was
mm-hmm.
pornographic or has had more artistic merit. But we, you know, we don't allow live sex, for instance, because
mm-hmm.
it's a public venue, and that's
mm-hmm.
just not something we can do. Although
mm-hmm.
the art on the walls can be that explicit.
Right.
It's an interesting
right.
distinction that we
yes.
have to make. But as a whole, we don't try to apply that, because
mm-hmm.
just in the same way that it is for me,
mm-hmm.
I can't dictate what's porn and what's not,
mm-hmm.
because you're going to think that's different
right.
than what I do.
Right.
So we leave it to the jury. We trust our jury and our directors
mm-hmm.
to ascertain what they feel is most it has the most artistic merit, and we
right.
hang that up.
Right. And in terms of the performances, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. You just said that you don't allow sex acts, but nudity and partial nudity is part and parcel. Yes,
it's a fuzzy thing,
yes,
because of the way
right.
the way specifically the way the liquor laws
yes,
in
exactly.
this
I was
state
just
work,
say that
right?
Next.
Yeah. So the art on the walls can be as explicit as you can imagine.
Right.
As provided that we have an age restriction. So
yes.
the event is all 18 and over for viewing the art, and 21 and over at night when we have a bar. But the art on the walls has its own regulations as far as the law goes. And
right.
in terms of the stage show, when you include live people, especially if there's alcohol in the space,
right.
You're not allowed to do nudity.
Right.
So the genitals on both men and women need to be covered, and nipples on women need
yes.
to be covered in the same way it is at a burlesque
right.
show.
Right.
So we are constrained
yes.
in that respect.
Interesting. Isn't it funny that, you know, that the popular culture intervenes like that, even in, you know, in a show like this.
It's very strange, yeah.
Oh, interesting. So, just, you know, again, I'd like to pick your brain for you personally. We've just talked about the distinction between the erotic and pornographic. There is a line somewhere for you, yes? And you couldn't really, you know, tell me right now what that line is always and forever, but you know it when you see it?
It's a good question. I think, just like you said, it depends on your state of mind.
Right.
It depends
right.
on kind of what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I could watch, you know, a garden variety porn video
mm-hmm.
Streamed off the internet and probably find something in there that was that had some, you know, some artistic sensibilities,
right.
whether that was some camera angle or
right.
some piece of acting maybe
yeah,
or
right.
a pose or some clever editing.
Right,
and there
right.
could be some artistic
yeah.
something in there.
Yeah.
So it's everywhere. I mean, art can be found in so many different
right.
places.
Right.
And at the same way, so can porn.
Right.
You know, you can find arousal in all yeah. of those same things.
Right.
So I wouldn't say that I have a hard... that I have a hard line
mm-hmm.
that I would be able to segregate
hard
all things into. Yes, a hard line.
No hard line.
Hard line.
Yeah, no hard Lines.
And lines.
the reason that this is so interesting to me is because in a previous incarnation, I did a lot of we did a lot of shooting of porn here in Seattle with my video production company, Daddy O Productions, and we tried to do things, you know, very different than what was filling the marketplace back then, and so our stuff was a whole lot more romantic, alluring, and seductive, and not just bumping parts. And it was interesting, the kind of response that we got from people was just like, wait a minute, you know, this isn't porn, you know, there's too much kissing. Where are the cum shots? The money shots, damn it.
Right.
So it sometimes you get it coming and going, so to speak,
no
as it were. So do you suppose that the distinction between erotic art and pornography is in the intent of the depiction or performance as well, or literary contribution as well as the message?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, for instance, one of my inspirations in the show that I commissioned for this year is Short Bus, the film Short Bus.
Oh, right, exactly.
Which is a film, a mainstream film made by an independent filmmaker, John Cameron Mitchell, that features some very explicit sexuality. It's an amazing film,
yes,
but it does have very graphic sex in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the film tells the story of some characters who are transformed in a variety of ways, but the sexual experiences that they have are a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure somebody can and no doubt has watched that film and labeled it as porn, because
right.
it does include sex, it does include cum
mm-hmm.
shots, it does have full nudity in
mm-hmm.
it. But at the same time, there's a very emotional arc
mm-hmm.
in the story,
right.
and it's a story of character and transformation. So,
mm-hmm. And not just the pizza boy,
not just the plumber that shows up, and right, and so there's a lot of art in
yeah.
that, and so I'm sure that two people could sit on the couch and watch the same mm-hmm. movie, and one would toss it out the window as porn, and
yeah.
the other one would decide it's the most important piece of art they've ever seen,
right.
and it's so subjective.
Yeah.
It's really, really
it
hard
really
to
is.
Delineate
it's so,
that.
Yeah.
yeah.
It is. So before we conclude, because our time is up again this week, which I could go on for days. You're such an interesting man to chat with. But before we conclude, can you give us the Seattle Erotic Art Festival website address
absolutely.
And maybe walk us around a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. The website is seattleerotic.org. And that's a brand new site for this year, and it includes, you can obviously buy tickets for the event, and it has a full list of all of the artists showing in the festival. It has the literary art contributors, it has a list of all the performers, it also has some background on the festival and some photos from the other events and other things that we've done.
And the dates again?
The dates are April 30th through May 2nd.
Right.
So the Friday, April 30th, is the opening date for the public opening for the festival, and that runs late on Friday. There's a nice lounge after the show, and then Saturday night, May 1st, is our big after party, and then Sunday is our free open house.
Right.
So you can come see the art. If you're not interested in the performance part of things, you can come see the art for free on Sunday, May 2nd.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Clayton, for being
thank
so generous with your precious time.
It's great fun.
Good. And we are all the richer for the experience, and I look forward to seeing you at the festival.
Great, thank you.
End of the month.
Thanks for having me. Great.
Good.
A lot.
Thank you. Be well.
Thank you.
Hey, what a great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stock Room.
You call this a honeymoon?
Now, dear, I'll make it up to you. So listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stock room, you'd better just call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my new product review site, DrDickSexToyReviews.com. I and the fabulous Dr. Dick review crew review all kinds of adult-related goodies. Sex toys, for sure, but also condoms, lubes, herbal products, fetish gear and wear, as well as educational and enrichment videos. Don't miss a single one. Be sure to check out DrDickSexToyReviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. And look for the My Stockroom tab right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com.
Oh, am I sorry.
And rightfully so, because you keep interrupting me. Look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section, obviously, under Health, subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe, and feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Well, that's even better. Over and out.